powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost. Here we
go now. So I have two bits of good news this morning, you guys.
Please give me good news.
Number one, I've decided to buy an air fryer.
Yes.
I've been told it's going to be life-changing.
I'm excited for you.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm really excited. I mean, at first I thought, why would I fry all of my food? But my understanding is that's not actually what it does.
It's a mini convection oven is what it is.
Right. I wish I knew what that was. But either way, I'm really excited to eat my frozen food in different ways. The second bit of good news I have is the Mariners' playoff odds actually went up.
Which is ridiculous.
I don't believe you.
Let me walk you through this one. The Mariners are at near 100% odds to make the playoffs. FanGraphs has them at 99.8. Keep in mind that this comes after yesterday's loss, where their playoff odds were previously 99.1. Why? Because the Orioles also lost, which maintains Seattle's essentially five because of the tiebreaker, game lead in the third wildcard spot. Also, the White Sox fell to Detroit, and they're close to being eliminated, and that's particularly true with Cleveland clinching the AL Central yesterday. So basically, a ton of stuff happened in the AL Central, and then with one team in the AL East being Baltimore, that kind of improved your own playoff odds.
I don't care.
But
I'm
do
depressed.
You feel good about it?
I don't feel good at all. I don't feel good at all after what we've seen from them this last week.
Yeah, still feels like they were up 11-2 at some point and found a way to lose that game.
Well, funny you say that. Here's the Royals making it 12-11. The Mariners officially blowing a 9-run lead.
The 1-1. Swing on, line drive down the right field line. Fair ball. Scoring is Oliveras. Massey to third, getting a wave on. Here's the throw to the plate. Not in time. Brother. Kansas City has taken a 12-11 lead here in the sixth inning.
We were obviously paying attention to this game. Bob Stelton, me, Brandon Gustafson, Moore Dooley, we're all in the press box watching the Seahawks game. And we had this up. Brandon and Bob had it up on their computers. And at one point, it went from 11-2 to like 11-7, right?
Yeah.
And either Bob or Brandon was like, God, imagine them, like, imagine what would happen if they blew this. There's no way.
We but, don't
like,
have to imagine anymore.
Because they did. Because they actually ended up doing it. And we were just in disbelief, having joked about it. Like, all right, just Seattle's luck, that would happen. But there's no way.
No way.
We're all ribbing each other. Like, good one. Good one, Brandon. Hilarious. It ended up happening.
Yeah, I was sitting next to Paul Moyer. He had it up on his iPad. And he taps me on the shoulder. He goes, oh, bump 11-2. We're good. I'll bump 11-7. Oh, I think it was 11-9 or something like that. I'm like, no freaking way this is going to go down. Like, at 11-2, I go, okay, I can focus solely on this Seahawks game and give it my undivided attention. But no, it seemed impossible.
Mm-hmm.
In my head, there was no way that this was going to happen, but it happened. So, yeah, happy Monday.
The air fryer. Think of the air fryer. Think of me in my life. From the 206... on the Mac and Jack's text line. By the way, join this conversation anytime, 866-979-3776. It's one game out of 162. Suck it up.
Actually, it's one game out of 10 remaining. Like, all the games that have been played in the past do not matter now. You have 10 games remaining. Like, that should increase the urgency with every single game that the Mariners play from here on out.
Yeah, the only reason why I feel a bit better is because of all the numbers you just threw out about why their chances increase. But I'm thinking about this team as they get into the season after the regular season, mm-hmm. and I'm thinking, okay, this is not what I want to see.
Bump's not saying playoffs.
Not saying it. But totally this is not what I want to see going into that, you know? So it makes me a bit worried. Like, you should be concerned about your team. That's your team, right?
Yeah.
It's like when you see your child struggle or do something, you're like, all right, he's got to work through it, but I'm a bit concerned.
Very important to note that this isn't like a healthy Mariners team that just like lost a random game. You know, when like you'll randomly have the Astros fell to the Orioles, for instance, right? And I think in back-to-back games. And that's two games where you're like, literally no part of me thinks the Orioles are a better team than the Astros in any facet. Yeah, that feels like one game out of 162 or two games out of 162. This is more a banged up Mariners team that may or may not have Julio and Gino back at 100% when they are back with this squad, right? So when you're in the playoffs, if you're in the playoffs, knock on wood, like, who knows if these guys will both be at 100%. The concern is, well, what are you going to look like when you get there? That's why people are concerned. It's not just complaining about one loss out of 162 games. It's being worried. I mean, there are people worried that the Mariners will blow their chances. I feel pretty good about them being in the postseason. But there are people that are really worried that this is the team that will be in the postseason. And that team is not advancing.
Yeah, we talked about this, was it Friday? To what we were saying, we just want them to get in and be competitive. You know, we're not expecting them to win a World Series. You never know. Things happen. But you want them to get in and be competitive. And you just look at that last game and you're saying, okay, that is not a competitive team. But like you said, keep it in perspective. You don't have Suarez. You don't have Julio Rodriguez. The dump rat to come off the bench and save the day the other day. Castillo wasn't on point like the way we're used to seeing. So you're just seeing some things that make you a bit concerned, because the chances are they do make it into that season. And that they just don't look their best. They don't. Whoever they play doesn't get their best shot, and that's what you want. You want the Mariners to be able to get in and give whoever they're playing their best shot.
Now, I don't necessarily expect the bullpen, which has been fantastic for you all year, nor your starting rotation, which has also been fantastic, to collapse consistently. Like, I don't expect that. But do I wonder what kind of toll fatigue is taking? Yes. Do I wonder what kind of toll injuries are taking? Yes. And do I wonder a little bit whether the pressure of getting to the playoffs also affects the play we're seeing on the field right now? Yeah, I do wonder that. Scott Servais said that yesterday this team had a meeting all together, closed-door meeting, to try to get back together.
But we haven't played good baseball on this trip. That's the thing. You know, I talked to the team a little bit afterward, is we need to get back to playing baseball the way we have all year. That's allowed us to be in this position. We do have a good spot, the opportunity to make the playoffs. So the next 10 games will define, you know, where we're at. But we need to get back to playing good baseball. So
what kind of meeting do you think they had? Like, what happens in a closed-door meeting with the Mariners right now? If you're leading this meeting, what's going on in the meeting?
If I'm leading the meeting, I'm talking to the role players, the guys who aren't expected to do much, and saying, this is your opportunity, right? Life is all about opportunities. You have an opportunity to really help this team as we get healthy and get in there. I'm looking at these veterans. I'm saying, okay, what can you do to mentally get these guys ready? Because we're talking about it in the Sports Pit. A lot of these guys never been to the playoffs. They've never dealt with this type of pressure. So guys like Suarez and Winker, and guys who have been around the game for a long time. Even though people are going to say, Winker, well, he's struggling. Okay, he still brings value to the team with his experience. Guys like Robbie. And just try to give them a perspective that lightens them up a little bit and allows them to play with that freeness that we are used to seeing. Because Curtis pointed it out in the Sports Pit. They just seem tight. You know, they seem really tight at the plate, on the mound, in the outfield. You're battling the sun. One mistake happens and another mistake happens. It's like there's a snowball effect that's happening. So I think it's more just to calm yourselves down and just remember who you are. We got here for a reason.
I think it wasn't a Divish who was on with us a couple weeks ago. And I think it was Bump who asked him, like, what makes a good team? And are the Mariners one? And Bump or Divish said that bad teams find ways to lose. And I'm not calling the Mariners a bad team right now, because they are still well within shot of making the playoffs here, but they found ways to lose throughout this road trip. Like, it wasn't just their pitching, you know, wasn't on today. Their bats weren't on today. No, like, they blew it against the A's a couple of times. They blew it yesterday with a 9-run lead. Like, starting pitching wasn't there early in the Kansas City series with Kirby getting shelled after 2 innings. Gilbert didn't have it after 5 innings. Like, you get 6 shutout innings from Robbie Ray. The offense doesn't show up. Like, they found ways to lose on this road trip.
So, question then. I don't think they're a bad team, and I think that more often than not, they found ways to win. You can't be a playoff team and be a bad team. It is so exceptionally difficult to make the MLB postseason,
yeah,
especially
in baseball,
and especially in a really good division. It's one thing to, like, fall in backwards in the AL Central. It's another thing to make it in a division where you've got the best team in the American League, or certainly in the AL East, for instance, right, where you've got a ton of really good teams, historically great teams. So you can't say they're a bad team if they end up in the playoffs.
But
then what's the issue? What has been the issue in the Mariners more often than not of late having bad moments?
Yeah, bad moments. And right now it's health. I mean, it's health. We're seeing Tremel. We're seeing France at third base. You know, we're seeing Swaggerty out there. I mean, it's just because they don't have their dudes, it affects the way they play. And I guarantee you it affects their mental. Typically, who do you have smiling, running to the dugout, knowing that he's about to win this game for the baseball team?
Right, Julio
Rodriguez. Normally, who do you have in the dugout doing a little dance whenever someone does something?
Gino.
You know, it's just like that stuff matters. I think people, maybe people do, but you have to understand what a team is like, whether you're on the field or you're at work. Like when an integral part is missing from that team, something happens to that team. So this team is trying to figure out, okay, if we don't have our guys that are going to keep us calm and come through clutch, okay, how do we get through this?
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're learning right now.
Now, I think that because it was a complete implosion by pitching and the bullpen, maybe I'm not as panicked about it. I mean, it was really ugly. Like, that was an implosion. But I'm not looking at Luis Castillo saying he's a problem. I'm not looking at the bullpen saying it's a problem.
Nah.
So I'm not sure what to make of this, other than this team needs to get it together so that they don't limp, bruised, and without putting up a fight into the playoffs. I will not complain when this team gets to the playoffs. Nah. I will not complain. You will not hear me complain. But you know what would be really fun, because we all love sports and because of that we're all competitive people, to see the team put up a good fight.
Put up a fight. You know what happens?
Because they're good enough to do it. That's why.
They're
good enough to
That's
do it.
That's why I think we are concerned, because we know they're good enough. You know what happened when I shot my 77, Stace? Remember that? Shot that 77?
God. Curtis, once again, can we add
one
more tally?
This is the first I'm hearing of it.
You know what I'm saying? You know what happened? I shot a 90 the next round. You know what I'm saying? That's just how sports go, man. You're going to have your ups and downs. So let's get through this. But that still hurt.
Do you want to mention?
That still hurt.
Any more? Do you want to say
anything
else?
Nah, so when I did shoot that 77.
Okay. Oh, okay.
I was like, just make sure you get it out of your system, man. I just want to give you the space here. All right. We're obviously going to get back to the Mariners here. As a reminder, we do have the dugout. That's tomorrow, though, so we're going to have the Scott Service Show on tomorrow. The Mariners have an off day, correct, Curtis? So you'll have extra innings tonight from 7 to 9, where you're going to have a ton of fun.
Oh, man, so much fun talking Mariners.
Are you going to have some, like, silver linings here? Are you going to have some good stuff here on extra innings?
Boy, I mean, we've got surprise guest Brandon Gustafson. He's going to join me.
Special guest.
We also got another special guest, too. Do I dare spoil it now?
No, say who it is.
It's the Graz.
The Graz.
Oh, I'm glad you spoiled it.
Yeah.
Okay, so extra innings.
That'll be at 8.
Hosted by Curtis Rogers. Going to be on today from 7 to 9. It's on every Mariners off day. And the Graz going to be on this one, along with surprise special guest Brandon Gustafson, who is definitely not on
every single week. First appearance he's made this week.
But we are going to get back to this even before then at 11. So in about 45 minutes, Adam Jude of the Seattle Times is on coverage for this series. So we're going to figure out kind of what happened in Kansas City. Maybe he has more information about, how this team's moving forward. Anything else with Julio, Gino, any updates there? I hope it's all good news. Let's get to Headline Rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacy.
Headline number one, buried in the carnage of this weekend, the Mariners have signed Luis Castillo to a 5-year contract extension. What's the real headline?
A bad game overshadows otherwise good news. This is good news.
Great news. Great news. You want this guy to be here as long as he can, as long as he's pitching well and staying healthy. So, yeah. Guess it gives me a little something to cheer about.
That's
the thing. Still going to be here for a while.
The timing wasn't especially great given his struggles. There's going to be a press conference later today. We're going to see if we can jump into part of that press conference, maybe when DePoto is up there, see if he answers a few questions about the team in general in addition to Castillo. But this is great news. I think that there are some people who are worried, because Mariners fans have every right and every reason to be concerned about this team, even in the face of really great talent like Luis Castillo. But that being said, you guys, he is a top 10 pitcher in baseball. Mm-hmm. He is absolutely phenomenal. And those guys make mistakes. We saw Garrett Cole give up 6 runs to this team in New York, getting booed by Yankees fans. Garrett Cole is one of the best pitchers in the game.
All right, so now I wonder how the M's fans feel. So now, do you feel like this? Do you have more trust in this team now that they are going to continue to make the right moves to ensure that going forward, these guys are competitive?
I think that one of the things I always called, I critiqued this team for not doing was not retaining really good talent or being willing to spend. Seeing them do that with Julio, which was like easiest decision ever.
Yeah.
Seeing them do that with Luis Castillo, seeing them previously trade for, spend on Robbie Ray. They are making moves that I think, like, I can't even criticize these moves because this is exactly what I've been calling for years. Not only that, I actually think they're smart. They're good moves.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you.
I'm down for it.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two, the Cougs did not win against number 15, Oregon.
Curtis, I was going to have to block you, bro.
They did not
win. I was going to have to block you. That one hurt.
What's the real headline?
Between the Cougs' collapse against Oregon and the Mariners giving up 11 runs in one inning, it's hard to tell who Cooged it more.
Oh, no.
Hey, Stacy. You know what? Stacy, I don't ever want to hear you cheer for us again. I don't even wear anything that resembles
your filthy
crimson.
Husky paws off of,
you know what I'm saying?
Off of Bump's Cougs.
You should have sent the text thread. Oh my gosh, guys, they're doing it. Let's go. Oh yeah, well, the mood changed so quickly. Like,
not my team.
We don't want you no more.
I was like, this is fun. This is great. I hate Oregon. And then the collapse happened, and I may have said that they cooked it. I don't remember saying that. I don't remember.
This is.
I don't remember. I think so, like another.
I haven't said they've
person took
it
over
yet,
me.
Bump.
This is the thing.
But
that,
you're thinking it, Curtis. You're thinking it. Stop trying to appeal to Bob.
This is the thing that trips me out about UW fans, right? Last year,
I'm a UW alum.
You guys were garbitis basura, okay?
We were in a step
like,
back.
And it's like they don't exist anymore. It's like we're just going to ignore that they are bad.
Yeah.
But as soon as you have a couple good games,
right.
Now you guys are...
Michael Penix for Heisman!
Now Husky Stadium is full for some reason. And the boats are there on Lake Washington.
I got stuck in traffic
like,
last year.
Just be consistent, man. If you're going to ride with your squad, ride with your squad. UW looks good.
I have never in my life not claimed a UW game or a UW season. Do I wish they would have played the Apple Cup last year? Yeah. Like, it's weird that we canceled the Apple Cup last year and didn't play it at all. Like, that is weird. But I will never not claim this team when they're bad. Look, I had season tickets for a winless season and went to every single home game, okay?
Hey, Cougs, baby, let's bounce back. Let's go. Ride with my squad.
So good.
Ride with my squad.
We do have a minute. Okay,
team.
Here's the
They're
thing.
A good football
here's
team.
The thing. We do have, let's spend one more minute on this because the one thing that we said was, this is what I'm so sad about, Curtis, is Bump was going to come in here if the Cougs weren't ranked after beating Oregon and absolutely lose his mind in the newsroom. And I wanted that so badly to happen. Unfortunately, Oregon did come back and win this one. You can't really say the Cougs deserve to be ranked, but it was hard not to watch that team, even with the collapse, and say, man, this team's so much better than people give them credit for.
Here's the thing. They should have been ranked before that game. So if they were to lose to Oregon, they would still be ranked. That's the thing. But, you know, it is what it is. Hey, big ups to Oregon State, too. They play tough against USC. But in general, the Pac-12 looks good. All right. Can we at least say that? Goodness gracious. Go Cougs.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number three, history made on Friday night. Albert Pujols joining the 700 home run club. Here's what that sounded like.
Pujols shoots in the air. It's deep to left. Taylor's back at the wall. It's 700. Albert Pujols has joined the 700 home run club.
What's the real headline?
Couldn't happen to a better guy. And that's not facetious. Like, I don't know anyone who's like, I hate Albert Pujols. Like, when you saw him at the home run derby and every single player is going up to him, like, how'd you get to where you are? Like, rooting for him. My favorite was at the home run derby when he finds out he's advancing to the second round and just looks like he's like, no, you can take this
one. What?
He's exhausted. I mean, he was surprised and elated and happy, but imagine you're Julio Rodriguez. You have 25 home runs. You're very excited. And then you see someone hit 700 and you think, the career longevity and success and sustained success to get to that point, 700 100 home runs.
That's impressive, man. Pujols was one of my favorite players growing up. One, because he wore number 5. I loved number 5. His stance was beautiful. His demeanor, like the way he carried himself. And to see a guy go out there with a dad bod in today's game and perform the way he is performing,
respect.
I love
it. He probably went to Home Depot right after the game.
Right after. And some,
immediately
some
after.
Jesus sandals.
Oh,
no
my God.
Socks.
No.
No, with socks and a fanny pack.
Yeah, he was walking by people just like, are you using an anchor for that plywood there or for that drywall there? I hope you are. That's going to fall out immediately. It's Bump and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. Guys, it's time. We got to get to the Seahawks-Falcons game. Now, I do want to say something, okay? I don't want to sound like I'm being optimistic because I am going to be pretty critical here in a couple minutes. But I want to talk about the good to come from this game before we get to talking about some of the bad. And most importantly, when we talk about the bad, how much of it's fixable? Because that's what people are wondering. All of that coming your way next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy,
powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
So Pete Carroll, with this Seahawks loss to the Falcons, called it a good game. And I know that some people might have been like, no, was it a good game? And yeah, it didn't feel like a good game to fans who were leaving Lumen Field afterwards, but there was good to come from this one. The Seahawks offense actually played a pretty good game. Now, I know that there are some drives that both Pete and the rest of this team would want back, right? You only score a field goal in the second half. But you were otherwise moving. I mean, you had more total yards than the Falcons. You converted on like 53% of your third down attempts. You had 69 total plays as opposed to 44. You didn't rush the ball as much as you wanted, but you still had a season high in touches for Rashad Penny. Like, pretty much everything that could have gone well did. There were chants of Geno from the crowd for good reason, because Geno Smith and this group were driving at times. In fact, I think there would have been another score in there were it not for a Damian Lewis holding penalty. Mm-hmm. And a Damian Lewis penalty knocked out also, or knocked back into second and 20, that last second, you know, with a minute 17 left drive that ended with the interception.
Yep.
So when you think about it, take out two holds. Do you have two touchdowns? Do you have a field goal and another touchdown? I mean, this could have been a different game. So I'll say that. I'll say that Pete Carroll is not wrong.
All right, let me say one thing before you get into it.
Yes.
What percentage did I say Geno Smith needed to throw?
You said 72.
What did he throw for?
72.
All right, go ahead.
Proceed. I'm so upset about that. I can't handle that combined with you saying that Jared Kelnick would get two hits. And then him getting two hits in the game.
And a homer.
I just, like, I can feel like you're buying yourself more 77 mentions.
I just bought some.
What do you think of this from Seth Walder? It's especially timely given Sunday night's game between the 49ers and Broncos. Two great defenses, by the way. Holy cow. Seth Walder says, Geno Smith is 10th in quarterback rating this season. Russell Wilson is 21st.
Geno's playing better than Russell Wilson.
Right now, yes.
I'm not, and now, end of the season, we'll see what those numbers look like. But as of today, Geno Smith is the better quarterback. What Russell did last night, though, scrambled for a couple first downs. Beautiful back shoulder ball down in the red zone, and then handed the football off to Melvin Gordon. Russell won that game, and I think that's the difference, right? Geno Smith had a chance to win it, but yes, it was, what, a 4th and 19. You're backed up. He throws an interception. He's just trying to make a play. You cannot take a sack on 4th down when you're trying to win the game. But, man, that's the thing about Russ, man. He just finds ways to win. Ugly game. They punted 10 times. I think they're the first team to win after punting 10 times since 2016.
You had a safety from Jimmy G for San Francisco as well.
It was ugly.
Did you see Dan Orlovsky tweeting, freedom! It's not just me!
Dan Orlovsky's was still worse, though. He literally, like, ran laterally back at the end zone.
It's pretty hard to come back from that. Also, credit to John Boyle, who joins us on the huddle, for noting this. There was relief for Dan Orlovsky for stepping out of the end zone for the safety, and also for Sanchez with the now butt punt that happened with the Miami Dolphins. Yeah. We're going to get to the Dolphins, by the way. Mm-hmm. Crazy game for them. Also, some controversy to come from that when we get to NFL headlines. But yeah, you're right. Like, is Russell Wilson fundamentally a worse quarterback than Geno Smith? No.
Nah.
Like, look, I've seen 10 years of football from Russell Wilson. Do I think that Geno Smith is better than I initially gave him credit for? Yeah. I also think I was wrong about what his ceiling could be within this offense. And I think that that's the best news that you could have coming out of yesterday, right? Is they found ways to effectively use guys downfield.
Yep.
Because they were, I know that it felt like the Falcons were eating up yardage, and they were, but make no mistake, I think that the Seahawks offense was something like 6 point something yards per total play.
Yeah, they are 6.1.
So they were still moving. That's solid.
Just the Falcons were 7.1.
Yeah, that's a
problem.
There you
go. Yeah. Go get them.
We're going to get to that. We're going to get to the bad in a minute. Someone said, shut up, Stacey. They didn't get the win. It doesn't matter. This entire segment is about looking at some of the positives to come from this game. What counts? What matters? What is kind of like empty numbers and doesn't actually mean anything, mm-hmm. right? What's like the sugar-free stuff that you're like, oh, it's like just calories that like aren't really anything here. And then what's actually good? The actually good part to come from it is, I think, Geno and the offense.
Yeah, you got to look at Geno. They found a way to get DK involved. Now, he had a bunch of targets, right? He had 12 targets, but only 5 receptions. But they made it a point. They say, look, we have to get number 14 the ball. And then he scores his first touchdown. Another positive, Ken Walker had the most electric run of the season so far, a 21-yard game, where you see where this young man is going to be able to contribute to this team. Also, Tariq Woolen got his first interception of his career, the first interception for this team. Kobe Bryant had a sack. Who else had a sack? Was it Quentin Jefferson had a sack? So they checked some boxes. Now, did they check enough to win the ball game? No. There were some penalties that hurt them, costly penalties. We talked about the Damian Lewis one. But the tight ends got involved again. We saw Will Disley with a touchdown. Kobe Parkinson with a long of 36. Marquise Goodwin, we had a sighting. Marquise Goodwin, he had a catch, a 23-yard catch on fourth down. It was fourth and two. They make it 23. So those are the positives. Now, there definitely are some negatives because you lost the ball game and the Falcons were able to run for 179 yards.
Yeah, I mean, there are still limitations to this offense. I would have liked to see them get even more touches for the running backs. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Geno Smith's interception, when you had guys in the end zone, I couldn't tell if he was actually trying to target those guys or was targeting Lockett, because it was officially recorded as intended for Lockett, intercepted.
It looked like Lockett. But there was someone behind him, too, though.
Yeah, so you had, I think, like two or three guys who it would have been a touchdown. And I couldn't tell if he was targeting one of those guys and misfired, because that at least would feel slightly more forgivable. Mm-hmm. I'm like, hey, you meant to go for one of those guys. It was bad accuracy, but you meant to go for one of those guys. I mean, look, if you were to tell me week one, hey, the Seahawks offense, here you are, you know, kind of thinking ahead to 2023 and them hopefully trying to find their quarterback in a pretty quarterback rich class. If I were to hear, hey, the Seahawks offense can be like fine. Like, they can be fine. They can be decent. They can move down the field. They can make use of some of their tight ends, right? They can get some promising stuff from Rashad Penny and Ken Walker. Like, I'd feel good about that. But the problem is that would also assume the defense was playing really well.
Well, we thought going into the season that the defense was going to have to hold it down for them while the offense gets it together. Now, they've had their moments, right? First game, offense scores, 17 points? Second game, they score 7 points, and now they had 23. They went 6 quarters without scoring a touchdown. So it is an up-and-down 3 weeks so far.
Yeah.
But if you look at both sides, I think you look at Geno and you say, this dude's playing way better than we expected him to play, and the offense is doing some things that we haven't seen as far as getting the tight ends involved. So it's this is going to be a long season, you know? Yeah. This is the state we're in.
From the 509, Geno isn't a closer. So this is the thing that, and I'm seeing kind of this type of sentiment pop up on the Mac and Jack's text line from listeners, and I don't think they're necessarily wrong. Like, Geno is not your franchise guy that will go in there and save you games. Now, I say this after both Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen lost this weekend, so sometimes even those guys fail to close out the game. But being able to do that and be that guy is exceptionally difficult. Bump, if I were to be like, who in this game right now, not in this game, who in this league right now would you say, that's my closer, that's the guy that can get it done no matter what, I want the ball in his hands in the final minute, and I know that he can get it done. It's not 32. There aren't 32 answers.
Nah.
Probably not even 15 answers.
It's like 3 or 4, maybe.
Maybe not 10 answers. Yeah. Exactly. No one, I don't think people in Seattle think like Geno's that guy. But the idea is, for all the guys in the league who maybe aren't always to be that guy, they still have good pieces around them that are able to get it done. Yeah, like, you shouldn't be asking Geno to save you.
No, you shouldn't. But, I mean, also, I mean, let's look at the situation, right? He did exactly what he needed to do to get that team in a scoring position. Through the screen, bam, you're down on the 9-yard line, and then there is a penalty that puts you into 4th and 19. There aren't any plays designed for 4th and 19. Like, coordinators do not put themselves or prepare for that situation, because you get 4th and 19, you're like, all right, we're playing field position game now.
Yeah.
Let's just see what we can do. But you're right, it's been 8 years since Geno was the week 1 starter, so you don't have a big body of work. All you have is what you know of Geno, which was with the Jets, wasn't very good. And the last time he had a chance to close was against the St. Louis Rams last year. Guess what? Threw a pick, throwing it to Tyler Lockett, almost in the same spot.
Yeah.
So from what we know of him, no, Geno is not a closer. But I think that there are enough pieces around to where if you're not in 4th and 19, you probably feel pretty good about the Seahawks' chances to win that ballgame.
Okay, so let's talk about the pieces around Geno, right? Because to me, Geno exceeded my own expectations of Geno. My expectations of Geno are not look like Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
My expectations of Geno are, can you be as good as like a Ryan Tannehill type dude? If you can.
That's it, Ryan?
Great.
That's
it.
What you need, Ryan Tannehill?
I mean,
okay. There's got to be one more above Tannehill.
What's between Tannehill? What's above?
Well, I don't know.
I know. Okay, let's discuss this during the break of what our expectation, the best kind of comparison. Greg Rosenthal said that Stephen Ruiz, both of them were on with us, part of the Geno gang, Geno Nation. They said Geno maybe gang. Eli Manning.
Maybe. Yeah.
Coincidentally.
I can see that.
Yeah.
Eli's won Super Bowls because of great defenses.
That's the thing.
Good run game.
Well, funny you say that, Bump. Let's talk about the defense next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
Seattle Sports has a new name and now a new number. Remember, you can give us a call or send a text to 866-979-3776. Again, that number is 866-979-3776. The Mac and Jack's text line. Make sure you update your contacts to stay connected to the latest on Seattle Sports. We talked about the good in this one, and there was good to come from this one. Now let's go to the bad. And I'm going to get to the last point that we were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that it's fair to ask Geno Smith to save this team. Geno is not that kind of quarterback. The expectation, I mean, he might disagree with me and that's fine, right? Like,
yeah, he's supposed
I'm going
to
think he's supposed to. You're always supposed to believe in yourself more than other people probably do. Like, that's a healthy dose of confidence. That's good. I personally have not seen it, right?
Have seen what? His ability to save the team.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, I have seen him look like a much better quarterback than I thought, like an efficient quarterback, like a starting caliber quarterback, frankly, when you consider all the starters in the league. Have I seen him look like Pat Mahomes, Josh Allen, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers?
He's playing better than Aaron Rodgers.
He is right now. But that being said, has he looked like a guy where you're like, that's the franchise piece?
No.
And that's okay. Those weren't my expectations. Is it fair to ask him to be that? No, not with this team, because this is a team in a Pete Carroll championship formula that should have a great defense, a great run game, and a quarterback who can be the center of it all and learn when to distribute and learn when to, you know, throw it downfield.
Yep.
They've got the last part of that down. Where was the defense?
Where was the defense? They were on the football field.
They
were not making the plays necessary. The hard part about this defense is that you do check a couple boxes. Oh, we got a couple sacks. Man, we finally got an interception.
If you were to look at just isolated stats, good day.
You can say, all right, this defense was decent, but then you look at 179 mm-hmm. rushing yards. You look at there was a 3rd and 19 mm-hmm. that they allowed to get picked up. There were explosive plays down the field. Atlanta Falcons had explosive plays of 40 yards, 28, 30, 26, and 22. Whenever you are giving up those type of explosives, you're going to have a tough day.
Also, the only reason that the rushing yardage allowed doesn't look worse is because Denver was hesitant to use Javonte Williams so much in week 1. I have no idea why. He was running very effectively. If you look at last week, 189 allowed from San Francisco, 179 this week. With Denver in there, it was only 103 from Denver. They're allowing 157 rushing yards per game, 5 yards per carry. That's atrocious.
5.8,
atrocious run
six.
Defense. Only 1, 2, 3, 4 teams are worse than you. Carolina, Houston, Tennessee, and Chicago. Tennessee might actually be better now. Their stats were from 2 weeks combined. Seattle's was from the 3 weeks. Atlanta had fewer net yardage. I mean, you didn't allow over 400 yards, so I guess that's a plus, but they were efficient on third down. This just felt like a defense that Marcus Mariota looked way too comfortable. The Falcons were making it look way too easy, and this is not the kind of defense that the investments that they've made would lead you to believe.
No, you thought they would. One thing that they were decent at over the past couple of years is against the run, right? Being able to stop the run. The weak link has been the pass defense. So far, they've been okay against the pass. Another stat I look at, yesterday they were 4 for 7 on third downs. The Atlanta Falcons were. Forcing 7 third downs isn't enough. You're not making teams. So if you're not forcing a lot of third downs, that means on first down, they're getting success. On second downs, they're having success. They were also, the Atlanta Falcons were 3 for 4 in the red zone. The last 2 weeks, mm-hmm. this team has been awesome in the red zone. So you check a couple boxes here, and then you give up a little more there. In the red zone, you want to see them be a bit more stout. And then some defensive penalties, man. You got a holding on Mike Jackson. You got a roughing the passer against Quandre Diggs. It's like
that
all
one
these...
was-
Yeah,
horrible.
All these little mistakes add up to Patterson being able to run all over the place and you having to be dang near perfect near the end of the game to give your offense a chance to win this thing. So there's a lot going on with this defense. Things need to be fixed.
One listener says, hey, they're young. They've got a new scheme. Let them figure it out. Another says, Stacey, how's the 3-4 working out for those Seattle Seahawks? I'm actually going to pass that off to Bump, but before, I just want to say, as a response to the first text, I think that we have a little bit of a mislabeling in looking at the defense as mm-hmm. like a young, developing, learning defense. Once again, let me just remind you, I know that you do not have Jamal Adams out there.
Yeah.
Okay. I know that LJ Collier is on the injured reserve and is not like a really consistent starter for you. I know this.
Yep.
With that knowledge, the investments they've made on defense. Let's see. Jamal Adams was 2 first-round picks, $17 million a year. He was a 6th overall pick by the Jets, by the way. Quandre Diggs, you gave him a 3-year, $40 million contract. Cody Barton, he was a round 3 pick, still a day 2 pick. Jenna Nwosu, you gave 2 years, $20 million to. He was a 2nd-rounder. Jordan Brooks was a 1st-rounder. LJ Collier was a 1st-rounder. Daryl Taylor was a 2nd-rounder that you traded up to acquire. This is not a defense full of rookies. This is a defense that was going to have question marks at corner. And now has a question mark at strong safety with Josh Jones kind of catching up as backup. Mm-hmm. But the guys that were going to be involved in the big shifts in that 3-4 defense, they were former day 1 and day 2 picks. They were guys that have had investments made into them. Like, I question why our expectations for this defense are much lower than I think they should be.
I think last year made people believe that, or the last couple of years made people believe that this switch was going to be good mm-hmm. because we saw struggles with this defense last year. And now it's gotten better in some areas and worse in other places. And you mentioned Daryl Taylor, right? First rounder or second rounder?
Second rounder.
It's a second year playing, right? Who else you mentioned? Uchenna. He's coming from the Chargers. He also played mm-hmm. in a good defense. He's still trying to figure some things out. Like, I'm watching the film, and I don't think it's the scheme. I think it's the execution of the players. And then I always look at people, or in general, the 3-4 is not good against the run. But then I look at the stats across the league, and I look at the top 5 teams against the run. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 2 of them are running a 3-4. The number 1 team against the run is running a 3-4 in the Jacksonville Jaguars. Mm-hmm. The number 5 team in the Tampa Buccaneers are running a 3-4. And they are good against the run. So I understand that thinking is not wrong because the 3-4 just allows guards to get on that second level quicker. But I see teams who are doing it, and then I look at the film, and I see some things that need to be fixed. I like the scheme. It's all about the execution at this point. There's a lot of mistakes on that defense right now.
Well, in those defenses, Tampa Bay, for example, have some great guys up front, like a guy like Vita Vea. I have no idea about his health status right now, but a guy like Vita Vea, who, yes, is a first rounder, great outside linebackers, right? Like, that's where the big difference is made. Your outside linebackers right now, the two you mentioned, Daryl Taylor essentially in year 2, Uchenna mm-hmm. Nwosu figuring out a new team. Okay, fair. I'm surprised that that the guys they have up front, like Puna Ford's good. Al Woods is good. Now, neither are like Vita Vea, but I mean, Shelby Harris wasn't in this one. He missed it due to an injury, but also a personal family issue. So maybe it looks a bit different if he gets out there, but he's still a new player. Like, again, I think this defense should be better. I think there are going to be you know, some learning obstacles with switching to a new scheme, with getting some new guys involved in your defense. But I have felt this every year for the last couple years. Yeah. This defense has too much talent and too much invested in it to be 31st against the pass, to be struggling so much against opposing teams.
Yeah.
Especially when you consider Pete Carroll as a defensive head coach. Take out Russell Wilson, and now you're like, well, man, if you don't find a franchise quarterback, you better hope your defense can be great.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen it.
Nah, and what this defense is all about, edge, not doing a good job protecting the edge, forcing things inside.
Yeah.
And then in the middle, our linebackers need to do a bit better at just diagnosing what is going on in creating advantageous angles with these linemen who are reaching them 3 or 4 yards down the field.
Do you want to explain that a little bit more?
So when those guards release, because in a 3-4, you're asking your nose to two gap. He's getting on the center and he's two gapping, right? He's looking at both A gaps. And those guards are pretty much free release. They're getting up to the linebackers. In a 4-3, you have a 1-tech and a 3-tech. Those guards have to get their hands on a 1 to the 3 and then work up. So now they're just free releasing. And I'm looking at the film, and our linebackers are either fooled at times. There was a play where the fullback goes to the right, and Cody Barton just flies to the right, but then the running back goes the opposite direction. Or these guards are able to get hands on them so quickly without them diagnosing the play, and now they don't have a two-way go. They put themselves in a position where they're straight up with this guard instead of dipping to the right or cleaning and going the other way. You know, it's too straight up when it comes to their attacking angles instead of diagnosing a play and picking the right side.
How do you fix all of this on defense? How do you fix the defense? That's Bumps, one of Bumps' questions in four down territory. That's coming up at 11:13. Before then, the Mariners in all likelihood will make the playoffs. But what kind of team will we see when they get there? We're going to ask someone who got up close and personal with this team over the weekend. Don't go anywhere.